thank again all people who came, well, who took such big troubles to come here, and sometimes on a very short notice. And again, my great pleasure to welcome you all at Runica. So I'll be talking and giving some sort of an overview of Catalyze BDN, and you know, impose a very, again, my personal view on this subject. And I've been doing it, as you know, mostly by myself and the students. And but lately, we got into collaboration with Josef and Frank on working on Beryllium 9 constraints on the SUSE models. And so I will basically spend some time on conveying what I think is important, and that is that the catalyzed BDN is kind of a new generic way particle physics can affect the outcome of primordial reactions. Then I will sort of review the main catalytic processes, why it happens at all, and sort of talk about a little bit about enhancement of lithium 6 and beryllium 9 and the possible suppression of lithium 7 and beryllium 7. Then the point of that has been already discussed or debated, I would say, that are there important changes from the TX catalysis, and we find that there is absolutely not, but we'll have more time to discuss that if. Well, Rich said that it would be nice to come to a certain, you know, agreement on several subjects. This is certainly a subject I'd like to come to an agreement with, but you know, on a historical note, it's very dangerous to try to come to the consensus, you know, and you know, impose it on everyone, because then you might suppress the original thoughts, right?
One comment here, I know we haven't discussed this completely, but do you think there's absolutely no like influence of those states on the BDN afterwards?
Right.
And that would be surprising to me, because that formation of, for example, deuterium in a balanced state, you can produce even more molecules.
What I wanted to say, that there will be no drive down of lithium 6 abundance by any substantial factor. And I will comment on nuclear physics calculations that need to be done. So I'm motivated basically by the picture I stole from Google, and that is here is all the elements that are produced in stars. Here are the first two, and there is a big drop here, and as Brian refers to this as orphans and not like this. Well, you can sort of look at these orphans in more detail and use them as the powerful tool to sort of constrain anything that would possibly push this up. All right, and since they are in such minute abundances, you can have a very exquisite sensitivities to nuclear physics, and of course, you're also prone to various other things that can produce orphans. Very well. So, just a generic slide. The BDN theory, as we know very well, is the set of nuclear reactions with very well specified assumptions and initial conditions. We assume general relativity, isotropy of the space-time, and so on. The boundary conditions that were messed up by gamma enormously are actually the number of neutrons, the number of protons are the same. And as you cool down, the things evolve as it, they should, according to the laws of physics and general relativity. And there is more or less a consensus apart from this sticking point with the lithium. And there is one extra parameter, as Richard referred to, and that is the beryllium to photon ratio, which is now, thanks to the wonderful CMB experiments, is determined with a considerable degree of precision. So there is no more musing around where this eta beryllium is, at least not in the scale as it was in the early 90s. Very well. So then let's ask the question of how particle physics can affect BDN. And there are several ways it can occur. And I apologize here that I didn't include the what's called inhomogeneous VDM. That would be if we depart from the idea of total space-time isotropy and have some indeed pockets of concentrated matter or some kind. But those that are being discussed now very actively is the prediction. This is the things that affect the timing of reactions. Look, there is a time derivative that is related to the Hubble scale. So you can, for example, put new things into the Hubble expansion rate, new particles that are thermally excited, and of course you will be sensitive through this factor. Or you can have couplings, for example, if you are so flamboyant, changing in time, and that will affect the, say, deuterium binding energy, and of course, again, the timing of new important nuclear reactions. Then, as was discussed at length by Karsten and Kazunori, is that in principle, of course, it was very well known that you can introduce new non-thermal channels, say particles annihilate or decay, and they inject things into the plasma that are non-thermal, and thereby opening new reaction channels that don't exist in the standard VDN and producing lithium-6 or other elements, or deplete helium, but that's probably not the most sensitive. And it was realized in the past 2 years, and I think my work did drive the message home, but there was a lot of more work done after that, that things that relics that interact non-trivially under electromagnetism or SU3, so that they participate in strong and electromagnetic interactions, they do indeed open new reaction channels, and thereby maybe even providing catalyzing ingredients, and that will be imprinted very much on the abundance of elements that are not that common, like lithium-6 or beryllium-9. And that's a third generic way particle physics can affect VDN. Of course, if we talk about the specific model, say SUSY model, Gravitino, LSP, Neutralina, and LSP, this is yet another effect to be counted with. But if you sort of take a broader perspective and look at the VDN paradigm, this is a new way particle physics can, in fact, affect the outcome of nuclear reactions. So here's a very, very rough cartoon on what happens. The temperature drops this way, so this is the time evolves this way. This is the neutron and proton freeze out happens here. Deuterium bottleneck is here, new neutrino species could affect this, or couplings could affect that part, thereby affecting the helium for abundance. Decaying species can split off some of the helium-4, impinge on existing helium-3, produce lithium-6, and so on. And a catalyzed VDN, as was referred already in the talk, happens about 5:30 a.m., and that is at temperatures about 8 keV, and it actually creates a bout of new nuclear reactions that create lithium-6, also create beryllium-9, and if you're lucky, if you have enough of these particles early on, you could also suppress lithium-7 abundance. It is remarkable that if this scenario is pushed to work, it also points out to the very roughly the very same region in the lifetimes that follows from the solutions of lithium-7, lithium-6 sort of discrepancy using the unstable particles. I find it it's essentially the very same region of lifetimes. So here's of course the picture that we've all seen. I like to quote the first papers that came out of various BBN groups, because then they're less prone to the time effect of sliding towards the BBN agreement. But, okay, so you see that the deuterium more or less in agreement, but there is a large dispersion. There is a discussion of that being done already by Richard. There is a discrepancy in lithium 7. Now, I detected in Richard's talk that the certain sentiment that maybe, that indeed maybe, it's a result of the nuclear sort of depletion in stars and of astrophysics, but we shouldn't necessarily jump on this and use it as a constraint on models, because that you know, if indeed LHC produces you know, unstable particles and they're being detected, then you know, it would be yet another embarrassment to the whole field, right? So this is, I personally think that it should be taken seriously, but of course I also agree with Carsten that you know, before we cannot just on using the cosmology and astrophysics alone, it's maybe unlikely that we will be able to fully resolve that. Or with the, you know, absolute degree of certainty, unless we take a walk or something, which is not how the science is done. So this is again the picture that we saw. There is lithium 7. Whether it has the run up or not with metallicity, it's an open question. Whether this is sort of made look like a plateau in many ways, but there is a detection of lithium 6, perhaps most likely, and it's sort of. Doesn't here you would kind of want it to go along with the metallicity, but it doesn't seem so. So it's not it's of course not clear. And this is the most interesting thing to follow in the coming years of what will become of this. Beryllium 9. Never mind this. This is a kind of technical thing. The beryllium 9 is showing a nice evolution, except for one point, which could be of course a fluctuation. But the point is that it's well detected, and it's detected down to very, very, very minute numbers. So there could be more sensitivity through this, should you have a model that produces primordial beryllium 9. Very well. So just a recap on particle physics, Bayesian standard model, and BBN. So three ways, as I said, to affect the timing of the reactions, you need something big way, sort of, as you have energies as much as in the new species as much as you have already there from the start. So, say, new extra new thermally excited degree of freedom, like neutrino, or tracking quintessence that tracks it at the 30% energy density or something like that, and. You through energy injection, you are sensitive to the energy injected, and also important whether it's electromagnetic or hadronic times 10 to the minus. Well, that's a typical sensitivity if the decays happen later. And the catalysis is really sensitive only to the number density of these particles, especially if they have. Simple properties like just the charged particles and nothing else. So for our calculations, we choose this the simple input the particles per baryon, and nicely enough, if you have a well specified framework of particle physics, let's say these are charged particles that annihilate to two gammas, you can actually calculate what their abundance is from a standard. Annihilation at the freeze out, assuming no symmetry. Now, particle antiparticle symmetry. Now, that's typically you have a particle of a TeV scale annihilating. You will have say five particle per 100 proton per 100 baryons. Other changes in elemental abundances from mere presence of these particles and. Yes, and I could actually make a stronger statement that anything at all that sticks to helium, it doesn't matter what, right? It could be a microscopic flying saucer with a little green man that holds a helium atom with a binding energy between this and this. There will be a catalysis of lithium-6 production because the next coming deuterium nucleus has a better chance of ripping off this helium from the hand of this little man and producing lithium-6 than it has in the vacuum in a free state. And also, I should say that any quantity of this bound state, and this is a notice that this is a stable bound state under this catalytic picture, in excess of this, will produce beryllium 9 in excess of that, and that's pretty cool. So let's look at the properties of the bound state. You have a heavy particle here, unlike in Dr. Corey talk. This is static, then the nucleus rotates around it, all right? And the distance between the helium center of the helium nucleus and this particle is roughly on the scale of 4 Fermi. So this is nuclear, a little bit larger than the nuclear scale. And beryllium 7x, for example, this is already inside the nuclear radius. So the actual correction to the binding energy from the finite radius is 50%. If you look at the px bound state, this is a different picture. So if the x particle is here, the p will be at 28 Fermi, very far apart and not really at the nuclear distance. And the binding is 25 keV. Well, so these are different things. As I said, beryllium 7 is beryllium 8 is a stable nucleus if you manage to attach it to X particle. And the temperatures here is the temperatures when the photo dissociation of these states falls below the Hubble expansion rate, and 8.2 is keV is when you can no longer efficiently photo dissociate helium X bound states, and that's where the catalytic effect happens. So this is the standard BDN process that is suppressed, as was mentioned, by quadrupole suppression, and there is a recoil process that has two sources of enhancement, the gamma source, there is a Coulomb screening, and the prefactor, which was estimated by me in the original paper, but was later much more improved, done in a much more improved way with the three-body nuclear calculation by Professor Kamimura, and will all be looking forward to hearing his talk tomorrow. Very well. You can, in any ways, the enhancement in the rate is about 7 orders of magnitude, and that's a huge enhancement is the reason for driving up lithium-6 abundance. Now, for standard, there are more new reactions, right? But in standard BDN, this is not possible, right? Because beryllium-8 is an unstable nucleus. You have to have huge concentrations of stuff to make this happen. Incidentally, a lot is known about this in reverse, right? Because people just love to radiate beryllium-9 with gamma rays, and a lot of things are known through these things. Well, if you have beryllium-8x, again, you can have a catalyzed process where no gamma in the final state, but the recoil. And you have the, that's my estimate for the cross section. I'd love to see someone with a professional experience in nuclear physics to redo that. The process is actually enhanced because there is a resonance of the excited state of beryllium 9 1/2 plus right at the threshold within what accuracy of the model what for the charge distribution that that I have for beryllium 9 and beryllium 8. So the actual calculation would be to check on the and what's important though that the width of this resonance is about 100 keV, so it's not likely that the motion of this resonance up or down due to the error would change the results by orders of magnitude, because that's comparable to the width. So the beryllium, if lithium-6 is produced, its production is delayed by helium-X bottleneck. Beryllium-9 is production is delayed by the double bottlenecks, because you have to get to the beryllium X. There is a late time thing that I analyzed in my paper, but there is also an early time chain that I mentioned, but never implemented into the code. Anyways, for me, it was kind of neat to see that sometimes you can have a nuclear process, and the nuclear uncertainties do not enter. How that possible? And this, for example, possible, I don't know, this is probably, you know, a nuclear physicist would laugh at me when I say that, because this is like a probably a very well known thing. But if you have a Bright-Wigner cross-section where outgoing width is just the simple gamma emission of this nucleus on the orbit of the bound state, and incoming width is the nuclear width, and if you have this hierarchy of interactions, this Bright-Wigner formula is actually collapses to a delta function, and nothing depends on the larger width that is given by the nuclear process, and everything is set by the smallest width. So this is for me, it was kind of an eye opener, because I never thought that's possible. Now this is the results of the calculation with this input. So I have really long-lived particle, a typical abundance, and you can see that lithium-7 is catalyzed quite a bit. Beryllium-9 is catalyzed to 10 to minus 10. You may say, oh, that's a small abundance, but the lithium beryllium-9 is actually observed at some systems below 10 to minus 13. So this is not going to fly very well with observations, because then you should see the plateau right there. And beryllium-9 is more stable than lithium-6, and so at stellar temperatures, so potentially a better constraint on these models once the nuclear rates are checked by other people. So this is sort of a just so scenario where I choose a rather large initial abundance and the lifetimes of that sort that tend to drive down the lithium-7 plus beryllium-7 abundance, and also at the later times, this drops due to the decay. You do have the catalysis of lithium-6 and beryllium-9 to say provocative values that are comparable to what's current experimental observational rather sensitivity can observe. Very well. Just have another word here. The catalytic suppression of beryllium-7 and lithium-7 it's really controlled by this bottleneck reaction, and it's important to calculate its rate properly. I'm pretty sure a good job with the non-resonant parts of it, but there is a residual sensitivity to resonances, excitations of beryllium-7, because there is a excited state at 400 kV in beryllium-7, which has to be taken into account properly, and that's a big job for nuclear physicists. Now, there are two ways, several ways you can catalyze the destruction of this thing once in the bound state. There is a peer reaction, and in my first try in this paper, I foolishly forgot the reverse rate, which was pointed out by Carsten, and I thank him for that. And there is also another possibility, the variant of which Kazunori Kori already discussed, and that is you can have some sort of a weak capture that happens right away. So if you have a W line, that the W boson line that connects beryllium-7 and lithium-7, you immediately transfer beryllium-7 to lithium-7, and guess what? Lithium-7 is fragile until 20 kV or so, and it gets destroyed by protons. And that's for example what can happen. This is the standard kind of total lithium line, and this if in that model with the fast internal capture, you can start depleting it right here, and then the depletion stops because lithium-7 stops burning, and these particles also decay. So you could have just so scenarios with the catalyzed rates that suppress. Now, here is I must say the whole thing actually surprised me a lot, because I never thought it would be an issue, but it was. Actually, this idea of PX catalysis resurfaces for, a lot, and it starts from actually the paper by Dimopoulos and Starkman and others in the 80s. They give sort of a dual answer. If this rate is large, then there will be an effect. But if it's not, then there will be no effect, right? So, which is not a, not a very necessarily very useful statement, right? anyways, so Karsten had a statement that this reaction rate is very, very strong. And here I would like to actually not even argue with that, but I don't think it's correct. But even I don't know.
I didn't say it's very strong. I got it there.
Yeah, OK, all right. But my point is I claim that even if I drive this reaction rate to the cross section, to the unitarity threshold, there would be no depletion of lithium 6. That's a strong statement,
that's
right?
Question.
Yeah, well.
It's not just that reaction rate itself which comes into play. It's a whole bunch of.
Yeah, but you forgot certain reactions, right? But anyway, so let me continue and we'll have a discussion in the discussion session. So the key to this whole thing, that, yes, indeed, well, one could expect this to happen. After all, there is this neutral particle here, but let's keep in mind that the distance between P and X is really large relative to the hadronic states. And so the key to the answer is to careful analysis of the charge exchange reactions, more so than the nuclear reactions. And there are two things that that drive down the, well, there is any incoming nucleus that is different than proton can have a very strong, will have a very strong cross section for deconfining the proton and releasing it in the plasma and clamping into clinging to the X particles. So here's let me show you this picture in more detail. There is a particle X minus or whatever the catalytic ingredient you like to call tau at zero. This is in units of Bohr radius of the PX system, and one unit is roughly 30 Fermi. So another particle, a heavier nucleus, which I can consider almost semi-classically, like if it's lithium 6, it moves very slowly, is somewhere over here. And this is a slice of potential energy that goes through X. So there is a Coulomb attraction and a Coulomb repulsion on the particle. And this is a potential energy for a proton. Okay, so this is just a simple kind of a picture of a Coulomb barrier like that and the Coulomb, a smaller Coulomb well. So if you actually superimpose one into another, you get that. Right, and now we study the question at which distances between the incoming nucleus and the X particle, the binding of the proton to the this negatively charged particle is no longer possible. Okay, and what happens is that initially you have a binding at 25 keV, but once you start approaching this particle, and for helium 4, it happens at 95 Fermi. So if you are sort of 100 Fermi away, this whole level is pushed not just to the zero, but above the energy in energy barrier here, and so there is no bound state ever possible for in the configuration between helium 4 at 95 Fermi from the X particle and the proton. The correct way of formulating it is not just the Born approximation doesn't work. It's actually that the perturbation induced by this nucleus, its energy impact on this system is much larger than the energy spacing in this system, where you know for sure that the perturbation theory doesn't work and you have to do something else. Yeah?
Sure. in the system
yeah.
is much larger.
Much larger than the atomic energy spacing in this system. And the confinement happens at the distances of 95 from me, which corresponds to the charge exchange reaction of that level.
Okay, so like only two comments from me.
Yeah.
The first comment is like, this is something which goes beyond the one-step approximation, because when you do a bond approximation,
you are outside of the validity of the one approximation.
But that's why it isn't the paper.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Now,
I never pretended I would be not the, I would be within the validity of the one
right.
approximation. That's why I...
Right, but I'd like to hear to argue that...
Can I just okay. another comment? The other thing is that if I remember right, at those temperatures, the Coulomb barrier is dominated. You start hitting the Coulomb barrier at a distance of 1,000 Fermi. Yeah? So that's why you actually have to go tunnel through the barrier.
Yeah.
It starts at 1,000 Fermi. And most of the suppression is actually given by distance between 1,000 Fermi and like two, three Fermi you want to be. So if you cut off a big tail of this, you know,
yeah.
Like then the Coulomb barrier is heavily reduced.
Yeah, it's
and so so like
the Coulomb barrier is reduced. I'm not saying this. You chop off the end of the yeah. of the Coulomb spectrum. But then you still ask the question, what is the more likely for a particle to do? Whether it would tunnel through the barrier in the lithium 6 case, because that's another good process you have to take into account. The incoming lithium, you gotta ask the question, what is it likely to do? To nuclear interact with the proton in the XP state, or a charge exchange with the XP state?
Yeah.
And the answer is that you approach lithium 6 at 135 Fermi, and there is a lot. That's how far it has to tunnel the proton. Yeah. But it actually loses the ability to bind to X minus. So the estimate for the charge exchange reaction cross section at this for lithium 6 on XP is around 600 bars. This is actually at these temperatures not far from the unitarity threshold for high Ls. And therefore, any process that you can imagine in nuclear physics will always be accompanied by the charge exchange reactions with at least equal probability, unless I'm making here theories of magnitude mistakes or something, which I don't think so. And in that case, you at least can destroy at least 50%, but not more. Because 50% will be trapped into the bar space with X and stay there. And another comment is that, the tracking goes to high and high L states. And it's almost like the particle comes, the proton deconfines, and it stays on the circular trajectory. And that's purely classical picture. And so classical physics would give you a better answer than if you would enforce the Born approximation on this.
So in other words, what you mean is like, it is very likely for like the lithium 6 to charge exchange, much more likely than to get destroyed.
Yeah, yeah.
And like after that, you assume the lithium 6 bound state with X is actually inert.
No, we actually put a little chain here, because what can happen is that you charge exchange, you get lithium X, then in the limit of a very large mass of the X particle, nothing happens, because this is they're almost two side objects. But you can kind of continue this chain, you get lithium X, lithium 6 X2, and finally lithium tau ammonium, if you like. But this is a very compact object that is getting destroyed by protons. So this is it's only at the very long end of the story. At the end of this, it will be destroyed. Anyways, we implemented this, and. We just looked at what the px abundance to begin with, starting from these assumptions. So one particle per 100 Bragg variance, and the px abundance here never elevates above 10 to the minus 7. And that's just not enough to do anything. But then you can progressively see that the bound states with major effects are just 10% or less, no, 5% or 10% from the total region 6 abundance, and further captures are very inefficient. So
can I ask the PF if the P is exchanging a lot, charge exchanging, but yeah. It's not just helium 6 but helium 2.
Yes, absolutely. That's the no nuclear rates here starting from this point, but just charge exchanges. Okay? Because mm-hmm. I haven't calculated. I'll wait for Professor Kanye to announce his result, but I don't think you got the nuclear rate right. But I'm not going to argue this point. I just want to say that let's assume whatever nuclear rate that at least half of this synthesized lithium will be protected by.
Well, you agree it's certainly interesting enough to have a closer look.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In my paper, I have never created what right. it was.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I feel that I overstayed my welcome, and I just my own welcome, and I just like to finish with some open issues from nuclear physicists that. We have almost a singular representation here in the audience. So what's the most important thing? I, of course, like very much that somebody bothered to look at this reaction and calculate it, but I'd like to see it calculated by other groups independently. So because that goes into key issue of for the catalysis of lithium 6. I'm not suggesting that your calculation is any. I'm not in the position of suggesting is anything wrong with that. I have no qualification to judge on that, but I would like to see other groups to calculate that. Now, for lithium 7 plus beryllium 7, it turns out that in the first version, I kind of didn't notice that there is a 2s resonant in the excited state of beryllium X, and it's within sort of 40 keV from the threshold. And the accuracy of the calculations of the nuclear rates of nuclear energy levels is just like that. So one has to look up this resonance because it can have a significant enhancement of this reaction, and it's a bottleneck for this destruction of lithium 7 and beryllium 7. Also, as we are going to hear a new calculation on this CDVN rate for this thing, so we'll see what comes out. And then, of course, beryllium 7x plus deuterium, if you look carefully on the beryllium 9 tables, there are lots of resonances that are about 500 kV up. And when attached to beryllium 9, they actually all come down. So there could be a resonant enhancement of this reaction rate. So one resonance, just naively, it is a 60 kV right at the thing where it is important. Now with beryllium 9, I'd say that there would be nice to calculate the CDD and catalyzed VDN rate for this reaction, and it's catalyzed. It's clearly that it's a large rate because beryllium it likes to interact with neutrons. It's a fact of life that nuclear physicists are using beryllium for moderating neutrons and so on. So this certainly has a large rate, but how large? And somebody should check on my estimate. Now there is of course a resonant formation. So everywhere you can see resonances. So there will be a resonant formation that of this beryllium 8x with atomic excitations here. So that has to be checked as well independently by the group. And there are rates of secondary importance that perhaps that are, in my opinion, catalyzed. But we'll see we'll hear tomorrow what happened. We certainly should have closure on this PX. Induced reactions, whether there are rates. I would say that there is still a residual, very strong Coulomb suppression from, say, tunneling from 100 Fermi to down to the nuclear sizes, and that's, of course, the nuclear calculations will confirm or not confirm. But let me come. Well, let me come to the conclusion. So the They catalyzed again is a new way particle physics can affect the outcome of primordial nuclear reactions, new in the sense that it wasn't looked in much detail in the past. And it's sensitive to overall abundance of X minus at a given temperature and nothing else. The main reason is that the new reaction channels that open up. So there is a kind of a CBDN pattern that there is a suppression, there is an enhancement, certain enhancement in these elements that also has a very interesting ratio. And this ratio is kind of, it depends almost entirely on nuclear physics. And assuming typical abundances, the whole framework imposes important constraints on the lifetimes. Now, you can also suppress this if you're lucky, if you have lots of these particles at the time of 30 keV. Now, catalysis by PX is not important, and that's the point that regardless of the issue with nuclear uncertainties, unless I made overcalculated the charge exchanges by orders and orders of magnitude. But my statement is that when a heavy nucleus comes near the XP state, the proton loses the ability to bind to the X at the distances over 100 Fermi. And that distance determines the critical impact parameter in the system, which determines the charge exchange. I furthermore checked that rates for the muon capture on hydrogen actually in accordance with these estimates. And anyone who has a program of muon capture on hydrogen can just code in the different mass values and that will be it. Okay, so this is a very easy thing to for others to check.
The 100 Fermi is kind of funny because, like you say, there's, for example, you say there's column barrier at 100 Fermi, which is seen, I don't understand this. Like, because, like, the X and the proton, the ball radius is 30 Fermi.
Yeah.
So if the lithium 6 comes.
But it's got a charge of 3.
Okay, so, like,
It has a charge of 3, and that's why it's.
So you use the.
It's why it pushes in front of it a huge Coulomb barrier that pushes the level up and out. And that's.
Sink.
Yeah, and careful investigations of resonant nuclear rates, and resonant is a key issue here, in CBDN are needed. Well, thank you very much for the question.
So we've perhaps gone over a little bit, because there's lots of exciting results, but I think there might be, you know, there might be a quick point or two that remains.
Should say something. We will have a discussion session if you like. We can go over the details, how I calculated the charge exchange reactions and what can you do. So the whole approach is more or less semi-classical. The incoming nucleus moves on the straight line, and the treatment of the proton inside is purely quantum mechanical, and all that I do, I determine the critical distance at which proton has two critical distances. At one where its energy goes above zero, but there is still a residual hump, and at the second critical distance very nearby when its energy determined through my variational calculations actually goes above the hump, but that means that there is no bound state whatsoever. And since the charge exchange reactions are known rather well from atomic physics and muons scattering on this is not.
Did you estimate like the Coulomb barrier suppression in your thing?
You mean in the nuclear?
No, you're talking about the Coulomb barrier suppression factor. That's one thing. You have several points. You have a point. But the Coulomb barrier suppression
for nuclear reactions. For nuclear reactions.
Yes.
No, I didn't calculate nuclear reactions. Only what I did, I did charge exchange reactions. And,
yes.
And my statement is, whatever result comes out of the nuclear calculation, if my charge exchange reactions are correct, if they are not wrong by orders of magnitude, then nothing happens. But nothing dramatic for lithium-6 will ever happen, because at least 50% of this lithium-6 will end up in the bound state, because the cross-section is very close to unitary. So the charge exchange reaction, at least, at the very most, the nuclear physics can provide at least comparable cross-section. It will be much smaller. Well, I'm pretty sure we'll see tomorrow. But
line of argument is like this. It doesn't necessarily have to do with the Coulomb situation so much.
What I'm saying.
The line of argument is the following, if I understand right.
Yeah.
That like when a lithium-6 comes, approaches, so to speak, like the bound state between photon and X,
yeah.
At that time it's much more likely to charge exchange.
Yeah.
And once like the lithium-6 has the X minus attached to it,
yeah.
You claim the reaction rates are going down by a large factor, just because...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, those are all things which... I believe one should check them. You know, like, do you think you don't believe that? I'm not sure if really like the reaction rate goes down by such a large factor once the lithium-6 is.
Oh, it depends on the mass of the X particle.
You can see it like this. You know, I mean, like in my naive nuclear physicist view, you can see like this. If I look at a neutron reaction, like the neutron, the rate goes towards a constant.
It decouples in the limit of infinite mass. It goes to exactly zero. Then we can ask the question, what is it for a GeV particle and so on. But if you have the collision of that sort, the rate of this reaction is proportional to the velocity of the relative velocity of this.
Well, probably wavelength goes as one.
And then goes to zero as an x going to plus infinity.
Then for Newton's, the rate is constant.
Yeah, it's a that's constant rate. It's 1 over V.
So, like,
is it signal?
1 over V. That's not.
Sigma V is a gun.
Yeah, I know.
And so, like, the way you could see it, maybe it's completely wrong, but the way you could see it is like, when you make your neutron very massive, so you attach an X to it, then the whole process happens at much lower velocity. But it doesn't necessarily mean the rate goes to zero. I think
the rate in this particular case will go to zero in this thing. And I can argue for that, because the reason for that, for the other thing I'm referring to, is one of the in neutron cross section. Here the cross section is geometric, and it's because then that's it, and just from the velocity you'll have. But in any case, what I think is that you did not calculate properly just the charge exchange with helium, of XP with helium, and that is we found cross sections of something like 300 bars, and this is a huge cross section relative to your rate that we showed you. But
you're
fine. Yours is more like 10 to the 25 centimeters squared. So there is a 3 order of magnitude right there.
You
can divide by the speed.
I'm straightforward in telling what I'm doing.
Me too. I determine the critical impact parameter, and what I'm saying that your method doesn't work because you assume zero polarizability of the XP state, and it's not correct.
And once more, this is not the method. There are no estimates in literature, okay? No estimates.
Not true. Muon scattering on X on hydrogen. Muon scattering on hydrogen.
That's not the same process.
It is absolutely the same process. Whoa.
So, like, what are you supposed to do if there's no estimates? You come with the first order estimate, and then you vary around this.
No, but.
And then you. I never wrote, you know. In my paper,
if you know in advance that your method doesn't work, you should say that.
Well, it's in the paper. I said it.
Right. So, okay.
I'm saying that. I know that one approximation does not work, or my particular scheme does not work. So
I'm saying more that semi-classical approximation should work with a rather good accuracy, and that's the cross section that I'm getting. Sorry. So
perhaps
you guys need to fight it out.
Right. Well, let's thank both speakers.
So we